You're listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, I'm really glad you joined us. American ideals and values are always contested, always in some sort of debate. That's the whole intent of our country. But this moment that we're in now, it feels especially ripe for hotly debated conversations about values, beliefs, and our collective goals as Americans. And because of that, many historical figures are being reconsidered, cast in new lights, recast, in some cases, in very different light. A lot of the public is questioning why we have sanitized so much of our history and provided unquestioning loyalty, not just to people who were Confederates, for instance, but also to some of our founders. So as people tear down statues and alter town squares, there are some open questions. Who should Americans honor? Who should we collectively appreciate and cherish for their contributions to this country? Who should we maybe be striving to be more like? And I think overarching all of those questions is this one. Is it that easy? Is there a simple matrix that we can kind of filter everything and everybody through in order to determine who's a hero and who's a villain? Think about your own life. Is it really easy to put people or things into very simple categories, especially over long periods of time? Bruce Levine is a history professor emeritus at the University of Illinois who recently wrote a book about a guy named Thaddeus Stevens. Stevens was a radical Republican who grew up poor in Vermont and came to support abolition, to fight economic inequality, advocate for reparations, and usher in Reconstruction during his time as a representative from Pennsylvania in the Civil War era. And yet, there are a lot of people who have no idea who that is. Levine argues convincingly that Stevens was an important American whose legacy should be honored, cherished, and remembered. And he fits into this context of these questions we're asking ourselves right now about what matters in America and American history and what we should be reconsidering. Professor Bruce Levine, welcome to Detroit Today.
Thank you, Stephen, and good morning, and please call me Bruce.
I will do that. Okay, so let's start with who Thaddeus Stevens was, talk about his record, and why you argue that he's such an important figure in American history.
Okay, well, just as you just said, he was born poor in Vermont, was educated there, born into a poor farming family that had recently moved to Vermont from Massachusetts in search of better life and better soil, but nonetheless a family that remained poor during his youth. After acquiring an education, he moved to Pennsylvania, became an attorney, and most importantly, moved into national politics. He early was a determined opponent of slavery, an enemy of slavery, and not only of slavery, but of race prejudice and racial discrimination. So in the mid-1830s, he refused to sign a revised state constitution in Pennsylvania that excluded black men from the vote, and he refused to sign it precisely because it did exclude black men from the vote. So by the 1830s, at the latest, Stevens was, for all intents and purposes, an abolitionist. He eventually moves through a series of political parties in search of one that really fits his radically democratic world outlook, and finally becomes one of the founders of the Republican Party in the middle of the 1850s, gets elected to the House of Representatives, first at the end of the 1840s as a Whig, and then at the end of the 1850s as a Republican, and in the House of Representatives becomes simultaneously a leader of the Republican delegation there and a leader of the party's most radical, most anti-slavery wing, the so-called Radical Republicans.
And so the things that he does and the things that he says, talk about why they elevate him in your mind to the status of hero. There were lots of people at that time on both sides of this issue whom we remember either as heroes or villains. What in your mind makes him stand out?
Well, the fact that he was, first of all, vocally and energetically anti-slavery in the 1830s placed him in a very small, tiny minority of the white population in the United States, a population that had long tolerated slavery and that was deeply imbued with anti-black racial prejudice. The fact that he was not only anti-slavery, but also a genuine racial egalitarian, put him in an even tinier minority. And perhaps most importantly, the fact that he effectively fought from the 1830s through his death in the late 1860s for the end of slavery and the end of racial discrimination, insofar as he could accomplish the latter, makes him a crucially important figure. He pushed public opinion and he pushed the Republican Party further and further and further than it probably would otherwise have gone to put an end to this hellspawn institution of African American slavery, and did his best to erase racial discrimination in the law. That, to me, makes him an extremely important person. He was recognized as such at the time by friend and foe alike, and was vilified or celebrated for those accomplishments precisely, again, by friends and foes.
And he is somebody who pushes the Republican Party, particularly in Congress, to these sort of, at the time, radical extremes, right? There are
right.
these debates going on in Congress about slavery, especially in the run-up to the war, and then, of course, during the war, and the debate of the Civil War amendments toward the war's end. And Stevens is somebody who is urging other Republicans to be more radical, to not accept the compromises that they are debating about equality. He is saying that that the goal is equality of all kinds, which at the time was a particularly unpopular notion, even among other Republicans.
Exactly right. Exactly right. So Stevens is the conscience, probably the most vocal conscience. He's not the only one. There are other radical Republicans in Congress, and there are other extremely effective and vocal abolitionists like Frederick Douglass outside of Congress. But he is a key driving force in the government to, during the war, make the war more and more an anti-slavery crusade, which is not the way the Republicans began the war, and to push the Republican Party into a stronger and stronger anti-slavery commitment during the war, which push succeeds, and then after the war to continue to fight to transform not only the states of the South, but the states throughout the United States into racially egalitarian democracies.
Yeah. I'm talking with Bruce Levine. He's a history professor emeritus at the University of Illinois, who recently wrote a book about Thaddeus Stevens. It's called Thaddeus Stevens, Civil War Revolutionary Fighter for Racial Justice. We're talking about that book and about Stevens' life, but also about this notion of American heroes. Do you know who Thaddeus Stevens was? Do you hear stories about the things that he did in the Civil War era Congress to push for equality, equality of many different kinds, in fact? If not, why do you think that's true? How do we define the people that we hold up as heroes in this country? It's a subject that I think a lot of us are thinking about these days a lot more as we reconsider the legacies of lots of historical Americans, and we see people's statues coming down, Confederate statues coming down. Some people would like to see our founders' statues reconsidered or come down because of their involvement with institutions like slavery and other forms of inequality. What do you make of how we sort all of that out as Americans? Who are your heroes? Call and tell us about the people that you lift up or would want to see lifted up in our history. As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to the WDET Facebook page and put comments there. Or you can go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll try to work you into the conversation. Of course, we can't talk about this subject without talking about race and the differences that unfold in American history because of racism. Call and tell us about heroes that you know of or idolize who aren't heroes because of their race, who aren't given their due recognition in your estimation because of who they are or what color they are. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number on the phones, and you can always go to social media to join us as well. Before we get to our listeners, Bruce, I do want to talk about why you think Thaddeus Stevens is not better known, is not given that status of American hero alongside others, especially of his era. You know, the arguments he has, for instance, with President Lincoln about slavery, the end of slavery, the end of the war, really suggest that he was in a more virtuous place in many ways than the president was, and yet everybody thinks of Lincoln as a hero. And not as many people give that same due to Thaddeus Stevens. How come that's so?
Exactly right. I think the key idea, it seems to me, in the discussion of who are our heroes is really who are we? What values do we hold dear? How do we see the world? And that, in turn, shapes who we pick out of the past to idolize, to celebrate, to build statues for. And so it was as the Republican Party and the North in general, following the Civil War's end, and following the defeat of Reconstruction in the 1870s, began to retreat from the values that had animated the struggle against slavery, it also turned its back on the people who had been in the forefront of the struggle against slavery and racial discrimination. Lincoln remained a hero because, in part because historians began to depict him as a conservative, which appealed to the increasingly conservative political instincts of the post-Civil War Republican Party. And before very long, outright hostility to what the Union had been fighting for during the Civil War and Reconstruction, hostility to those goals became entrenched in academia. A professor by the name of William Dunning at Columbia University helped to solidify a view of the Civil War that basically said it was an unfortunate occurrence in which both sides were valiant, both sides were noble. It was a very sad and probably avoidable struggle, conflict that should have been avoided, and Reconstruction was even worse. Following Dunning's influence, a whole generation of historians followed in his footsteps. So, for example, by the time John Kennedy goes to college in Harvard, that's the version of the Civil War he's being taught, including that Thaddeus Stevens and radical Republicans were villains, trying to impose Negro rule on the poor, innocent, defeated, well-intentioned white South. And JFK puts that interpretation into a book that wins him the Pulitzer Prize, mm-hmm. Profiles in Courage. And it's only after the Civil War gets underway that Kennedy reportedly begins to wonder whether he hadn't been sold a bill of goods while he was in college.
Yeah.
And it's really not until the 1970s that historians begin in a systematic way to rethink this conservative and racially influenced view of the Civil War era. Yeah. And so Thaddeus Stevens begins to creep back into public consciousness. So, for example, he does indeed appear finally in a movie that seems to try to depict him in a positive light, the Lincoln film of about 10 years ago. But even that makes him look like as much of an impediment to abolition as a champion of abolition. Makes Lincoln look like the prime mover, for example, behind the 13th Amendment. And you'd never know that from that film that Thaddeus Stevens was for that amendment a full year before Abraham Lincoln came around to endorsing the idea.
So this
it's still an uphill struggle to try to make people recognize that it required the push of people whose thinking was far ahead of their time, so to speak, to get what needed to be done actually accomplished. And so it is that within the last couple of months, a statue has finally gone up of Thaddeus Stevens in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, where he long lived and had his law office.
Okay, when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation about Thaddeus Stevens, about American heroes and American history. Want to get to you on the phones and on social media, Ben and St. Clair Shores, Roger in Detroit. We'll start with you if you want to join them. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today. This is Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and as always, thanks for tuning in. Our guest right now is Bruce Levine, who is a professor of emeritus of history at University of Illinois. He's written a book called Thaddeus Stevens, Civil War Revolutionary Fighter for Racial Justice. We're talking about Stevens, the role he played in Civil War era America, and why he's not better remembered by American culture today. It's a really important question that we're facing in a number of different ways as we kind of reconsider heroship in America. Who deserves a statue? Who deserves a street named after them or a school? We're asking those questions about Confederates, of course, but we're also asking those questions about the founders of this nation. Where does Thaddeus Stevens fit into all of that? We want to hear from you as well. What kinds of criteria do you use to determine who your heroes are in American history? Do you think of the founders of this nation as heroes? Do you think maybe of Confederates as heroes. I know a lot of people who do, even though they live in the North, in Michigan and other places like that. What do you think we ought to do with all of these legacies? How do we sort them out in a way that makes sense? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to the WDET Facebook page and put comments there. Or go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we'll work into the conversation. Let's start with Roger in Detroit. Roger, what's on your mind?
Hi.
Hey.
Hi. Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Okay. Listen, thank you for having Dr. Levine on. It's a great opportunity to talk about the Civil War and also talk about some of the key figures in the war. And certainly, from my perspective, Thaddeus Stevens ranks very high in that list. So my question is, did the radical Republicans have any impact on Lincoln's movement from a conservative white Republican from Illinois to the much more embracing the idea of the Emancipation Proclamation and ultimately his move to turbulent to abolish slavery? Just want to get his thoughts on that.
Yeah, great question, Roger. Bruce, there is this evolution of most of the characters who are involved in the run-up to the war itself, and then, of course, the aftermath of it. Lincoln is one of those. Talk about the influence of Stevens and the other radical Republicans on that evolution.
Well, I think it's easier to talk about their impact on the evolution than it is to talk about their impact specifically on Lincoln, because Lincoln doesn't keep a diary, or if he did, the diary hasn't survived.
Mm-hmm.
And his letters don't give us an indication of what, or better to say, who influenced his thinking during the war. Frederick Douglass says that it's the logic of this situation that the Union side of the war finds itself in that compels the Republican Party to move to a more and more firmly, radically anti-slavery position in order simply to defeat the forces of disunion. But there are plenty of people who want to put down secession who don't agree with an anti-slavery component mm-hmm. to the war. So there's nothing automatic about this. And the people who have to give voice to what Frederick Douglass calls the intrinsic logic of the situation are precisely the abolitionists out of Congress and the radicals in Congress who keep pounding away on the necessity to do away with slavery in order to win the war. And at first, Lincoln resists this logic because he thinks that an anti-slavery program will undermine the Union cause by alienating almost half of the northern population mm-hmm. and those in the slave states who are still attached to the Union. There are four of those states. And Lincoln even has illusions about the politics of people in the Confederacy. He thinks that most of them are basically pro-Union and can be won back to the Union if the Union simply is unnecessarily antagonizing them, and fighting against slavery, he feels sure, would antagonize them. By the middle of 1862, Lincoln has begun to see through these mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And he says in a couple of letters to Southern conservatives that bending to pro-slavery pressure has made him make the biggest mistakes of the Civil War. And so he's clearly leaning increasingly toward the radicals from that point onward. And so the Emancipation Proclamation, for something for which the radicals had been pressing
mm-hmm.
since the beginning of the war, is really an expression of their program. And they cheer it, of course, when Lincoln moves in that direction. And the radicals are also changing, and just as importantly, public opinion by what they're saying
sure.
And what they're doing, and making it possible for Lincoln thereby to move in a more anti-slavery direction, creating a public opinion, creating a constituency for the more emphatically anti-slavery, anti-racist measures that Lincoln begins to take.
Yeah, yeah. Roger, really appreciate the call and the provocative question. I want to quickly go to Ed in Detroit. Ed, I'm running out of time, but I wanted to get your question in here.
Okay. For most of the 20th century, the teaching of history, particularly at the K-12 level, was badly infected by the myth of the Lost Cause. And I think that the Southerners made the radical Republicans look like evil bogeyman. And that's why so many of us do not recall these stalwart defenders of union and liberty.
Yeah. Ed, that's a really interesting point as well. Bruce, I've only got about a minute left, but I want to have you respond to that.
Well, I completely agree. And this is not simply something happening at the behest of Southerners, but Northerners as well. You see this in Hollywood, for example, a whole series of films beginning with The Birth of a Nation, right down through the 30s and 40s, echo the myths of the so-called Lost Cause, the pro-South view of the Civil War and what that Civil War was about. And it remains a struggle to try to bring the truth about the Civil War era to the attention of the American population.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Bruce Levine, it was really great to have you here for this conversation, and it is really a wonderful, wonderful read, your book. Thanks so much for being with
us. Thank you for that nice comment, and thank you for having me.
Yeah. Okay, that is going to do it for us this week. Come back Monday when we're going to talk with reporter Tim Alberta about his new article that describes how politics, quote, poisoned the evangelical church. Really interesting part of our modern history and some of the culture wars that we are enduring right now. Detroit Today is produced by Sam Corey and Nick Ossidon. Our program director is Joan Isabella. Our technical director and engineer is Matthew Trevethan, and Detroit Today's music is created by Sam Bobian and Will Sessions. Also want to give a shout out to the folks at KBIA, the NPR affiliate in Columbia, Missouri, which is where I am. They are the ones who are making it possible for me to join you in Detroit for Detroit Today. This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit's NPR station, your connection to news, music, and conversation. We'll talk again on Monday.